Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Great starts. I knew you were going to say that. Well, we can leave that in. I wonder if a podcast has ever started that way with just a cough.
There's probably a podcast that exists that's just all about coughs.
No.
There are so many podcasts.
Yeah, I know. That is true.
Coughcast?
That's kind of a good idea. Different or different involuntary reactions.
It's not a good idea.
You don't think a fart cast? Just a I'd listen to a podcast all about farts.
You're getting warmer.
so to speak. Is a fart warmer than a cough, you think?
Probably the same.
Temperature, because it comes, but I would say a fart might
be warmer. Both 98.6 degrees.
I think a fart might be warmer only because it's been in your body longer. Like a cough is just like, there's no way to.
It still comes from your body. That's who cares true. How long it's been in there?
That's true. Oh man, I feel dumb. Isn't it funny? Like, of all the stuff I want to cut so far, that would be top of the list and not the involuntary cough at the beginning. Anyway, well,
should we just start the show?
You think?
Yeah.
Well, that's downstroke. That's an intro?
I like that story.
Well, should I just do the quick version of what we were going to say?
Sure.
Last night, I ate too many chessmen. That was it.
All right, here's the show.
Okay.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
You're listening to Life is Short. I am your slightly coffee host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart.
And with me, as always, is my bearded brother. He's not always bearded, Christian, but he's stroking it now.
You know, you say coffee host, and you're drinking coffee.
Oh, weird.
Double coffee.
Oh, that's strange. I didn't mean to do that. What's that called? What is that grammatical phenomena called?
An oopsie.
Oh, yeah. It's from Shakespeare's coined that term, I think.
Marlowe, I think.
Yeah. Anyway.
Speaking of chessmen that you indulged in last night.
I did. Well, I have
God, you are a maniac with those things.
I have a real problem. And I threw the bag at Christian at one point because I needed him to keep them away from me. I can't stop eating them.
You're like a junkie.
I eat them like chips.
You're like a junk food junkie.
Yeah. So I was eating popcorn earlier, and I was popping them as quickly as I was popping the chessmen.
Yeah, you eat chessmen like potato chips. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you're, 150 pounds?
Well, been going to the gym.
Shock. It doesn't matter.
No, I know. I guess I have a fast metabolism. Shock. But I know it's going to catch up to me, so I have to, like, I'm worried when I have those where I just pull the ripcord.
You might just wake up one day and be fat.
Yeah.
You know, you might be one of those, like,
everything just, like, falls apart. Why are we talking about...
Well, my favorite Pepperidge Farm cookie, you didn't ask me.
No, but I was about to.
I'm going
to
volunteer it.
About to.
Is Mint Milanos.
I like Mint Milanos a lot. They're my favorite type of... They're my favorite flavor Milano.
The
sure.
flakiness.
Yeah.
I think they're perfect.
They're satisfying, and there's just enough chocolate to get a little bit of that, and it's a good combination.
The raspberry Milanos are good, too, but... And the orange.
But the
mint is the best.
I saw some wild Milano flavors recently. It was like, I know there's double fudge, right?
Fudge.
And there's also a player on the Buffalo Bills called Matt Milano, which always confuses me. And I wonder.
Sounds like Mint Milano.
Yeah. I wonder if Matt Milano's listening. I wonder if he. I always wonder this when I watch him play, if he ever gets people call him Mint Milano.
There's another Milano, you know.
There sure is. Our very special guest today is named Milano. The star of iconic TV show Who's the Boss? The Milano that we're referring to is Alyssa.
Alyssa Milano.
Alyssa is, we've known her since we were kids, not personally, but of course we grew up watching Who's the Boss? There's a time for love and a time for loving.
Living.
The rest is up to you, my friend. Do you know the rest?
And interestingly enough, you are the one who sang that theme song for the show.
Yeah, people might not know that when I was five.
Also, that show took place in our hometown of Fairfield, Connecticut, and I thought that was so cool.
You both have to think it's cool that the fictional setting for Who's the Boss was your hometown. I did too.
I love that show.
Yeah, yeah.
Grew up watching that show. I you know, I associate
Catherine Hellman. How good was she?
Oh, Judith Light, Mona. Tony Danza. It's an amazing show.
Mona.
It's an amazing show. You sound a little too much like
Joey.
A little Joey Lawrence.
Whoa. Yes. Mona, whoa.
That show, you know, I associate it with being homesick from school. Because whenever I was homesick from school, I would watch.
Yes.
Every single time I'd watch that show. So,
me too.
And it gave me, like, You know when you're feeling shitty in school?
You're hanging out with people that you're...
Yeah, it's like it gave me, brought me comfort.
Yeah, it was a real comfort show. You don't both have to be comforted by Who's the Boss when you were homesick from school.
And of course, she's gone on to do so many other things. You know, she was on Charmed.
Yes, that was a show that I didn't get into when it was on. I didn't know it when it was on, but it is on all the time. It's like Charmed is one of those shows that like any time of the day you can watch it.
And now she is... I would say a pretty major activist.
Yeah, she's a player in the political sphere.
She's a political player
in the world of active.
A rather polarizing figure.
Activism.
I would say that's fair to say, right? She's quite polarizing.
She is polarizing.
She is opinionated, and she speaks her mind.
She sure does, and she often does on Twitter and Instagram. And I think she shows up at those marches and stuff, and really like walks the talk. This is the first time I've ever gotten to really sit down and have a one-on-one.
So let's get to know her better.
Here we go, the charming and charmed Alyssa Milano.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do 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 shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, This ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
Alyssa, do you miss the seasons? Do you miss living in LA? Do you miss the East Coast?
I mean, with climate change, we're now starting to get some seasons here. We had a thunderstorm the other day. And it was my kids, basically their first they're 10 and 7. And then the dogs were going nuts. And I have horses on the property. And they were all like freaking out.
Oh,
like, what
wild.
Is this? What is this sound and this light in the sky?
Oh my God.
You know, and of course, all of my friends are texting me like, oh, isn't it so, you know, just so cozy and romantic? And like in my head, I'm going, no, it's the end of the earth.
Yeah. What did your kids think? It's like, what was it like to experience lightning for the first time through their eyes? That's so wild.
They're like, oh, that's lightning. Right.
Oh,
because
God.
As a child, the imagery of a lightning bolt is, you know, obviously part of their world.
Yeah, well, the Chargers now, they're in LA. They're probably
right, the Chargers. We have tickets. So for them to see, like, oh, that's what all the fuss is about, is that. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Did they think it was cool? Were they into it?
Yeah, for sure.
Does it ever strike you, like, how different their lives are from the one that you had, like, from your own upbringing?
Well, yeah, for numerous reasons.
Yeah, yeah, I bet.
you know, I joke about all the time that I have Peter Pan syndrome because I didn't have a normal childhood. So yeah. I am definitely living vicariously through them. We just went and toured a middle school because it's, I don't know how it's that time. But it's that time for Milo, you know, he's in fourth grade, which I don't even understand, but I'm literally walking around this middle school, just like almost feeling a tinge of jealousy these kids are having such even with the masks and everything, it still feels more normal than what my experience was like.
Because how old were you, Alyssa, when you started?
I was my daughter's age. I was 7 years old when I did the play Annie.
Was it your doing? Were you like, I love it? Was it just simple as that?
For my sixth birthday, my aunt got me tickets to go see the play Annie. And yeah. I looked at her and my parents after that and I said, I could do that. Huh. And a year later, wow. I was in the second national touring company.
Oh, so, my God. Yeah. Do you remember that moment? I mean, do you remember seeing it and thinking that?
I remember things like vague instances. I remember seeing kids singing and dancing on stage. And, you know, I was such an artistic kid that just made sense to me. You know, once I started working, I remember like this feeling that I got from applause, you know, and that it was definitely lighting up some sort of reward
serotonin
center.
So,
reward center in my brain.
It's like you get 1,000 likes at the same time.
So, yeah. And then I got off the road and did some off-Broadway theater and then went for an audition for a show, a pilot called You're the Boss.
You're the Boss. It was called You're the Boss?
Yeah. Originally, it was called You're the Boss. And then I got Who's the Boss when I was 10.
Oh,
my
God.
The first season when I was 11, and we went until I was 19.
Well, and weirdly, it took place in Fairfield, Connecticut, right?
That's right.
That's where I am right now.
Are you in Angela Bauer's house?
Kind of. Hey, Mona. No, I wish. Although I remember talking to Tony Danza about – Tony Danza was when I met her, and I have such a bad memory that I'm kind of forgetting the circumstances, but I remember my grandmother and my mother were with me. And I don't think I had ever seen them both at the same time so charmed. They were so charmed by him.
He's a very charming guy, you know. They don't make him like that anymore.
Right.
He holds people's attention and is very comfortable in that. I feel like, you know, actors now sort of, you know, are not comfortable being the center of attention.
Or at least they feign like they're not.
Yeah. We're like conditioned to feel like we need to blend into the walls.
Yeah.
But he is very much a showman.
Yes.
And he does a one-man show and it's like
a
cabaret show and he sings and he dances. And
were you aware of who he was? And like, were you aware of what was your relationship like with fame or any kind of, and was he famous enough at the time for you to even consider that in your 10-year-old brain?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I knew him as like the cute guy from Taxi,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that's because Taxi
that's
was
right.
huge and Catherine was on Soap and that
right.
was a huge show. So yeah, I was aware of that kind of fame.
But did it intimidate you? I mean, were you like, you always struck me just watching you growing up, you always struck me as having a real sense of like confidence and self-assuredness.
Yeah, I think that I was always very comfortable in who I was.
Yeah.
And really grounded, which makes my adult not groundedness a little bit more ironic, but yes,
that's true, yeah.
There was something very, maybe even stoic about me as a child. I wasn't going to allow many people in. I was an only child too until I was, my brother and I are 10 years apart. So that may have had something to do with it.
Yeah. My mother as well. She's my uncle, the two of them are 10 years apart. And she always described it as being a little bit less of a sister, more of like an aunt to him. You know, a little bit more of a, she had enough authority and she never felt threatened by the attention he was getting.
He was like my baby.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I looked at it. And then when we were, I don't know, when he was about 15 and we started, you know, reading the same books and listening to the same music, that gap began to to shrink. And yeah,
that's so nice.
He just had a baby a couple of years ago, and I can't even, I am so obsessed with my nephew. In a way that I just didn't expect. I mean, I expected to love my nephew. I love children.
In a way that you weren't with your own children. You can say it.
Yeah. No. Well, that's true. It's totally different with my kids.
I hope Milo's listening to this one year.
Poor Milo.
So then it became like when You're the Boss became Who's the Boss and Who's the Boss became this crazy thing. How drastically and how quickly did that change your life?
Well, it felt really slow because the first year of the show, we were on against Family Ties. And of course, this was back in the day when we only had three networks.
Yes.
And so we came in almost dead last in the Nielsen ratings every single week. But ABC believed in us so much that they just kept shifting our time slot and our night, and which would never happen now. And then we ended up after, this is how long ago this was, after Happy Days, in the final Happy Days season.
Oh my God, I always forget Happy Days bled into that 80s time, like mid-80s. That's crazy.
And then we were a top 10 show for the, you know, remainder of the 7 years we were on the air after
that. Oh my
God,
yeah.
Yeah, we had a rough start. But I would say it started getting weird for me, just because I was not used to not being able to go any place without being recognized.
Yeah.
When I was about, I would say, maybe about 13.
Wow.
And that was kind of my existence.
What were the beginnings? Like, what did it feel like in the beginning with the first few inklings that that might now be your existence? Was it, you probably had no way of knowing that it would be sustained, but was it cool in the beginning? Was there an element of like, oh, cool?
No, I was the kind of kid that always wanted to try to figure things out. And I could never figure out like why I was chosen to live this existence. It wasn't uncomfortable for me, but it was uncomfortable for my family. And I knew that them being uncomfortable and feeling so protective of me in public made me worry about them.
I bet.
So where, you know, I think kids worry about their parents all the time. That was my worry was.
And like, oh, I'm causing this. There must have been a degree of shame. Yeah.
Exactly. It wasn't shame. It was just like, why?
Responsibility.
Why me? And a responsibility and a little bit of embarrassment.
So
it wasn't shame. It was embarrassment of things like, you know, going through puberty in front of all of America. And
having people like dissect you. And
when I started developing, they wrote it into the show. I mean, I got a script on a Friday night after a taping called Sam's First Bra. And I was like, I was probably 11 or 12 at the time.
And
I was mortified.
I bet, because you probably hadn't even had those conversations with, I mean, that's such a delicate time, such a vulnerable thing to go through.
Yeah. I didn't go to a regular school. So I think had I gone to a regular school, I think a lot of it would have balanced out. But because I was tutored on the set for 9 months out of the year, there was no real balance.
And so were your parents in any way? So it doesn't sound like they pushed you into it at all. It sounds like it was something you really wanted to do. Yeah.
Huh. No. And to the point where my mom didn't even come to set with me. She hired a guardian because my brother was so much younger. It was so important to my mom to be also his mom and to, you know, have dinner on the table when I got home from work. And she would tell you, you know, her job was to make sure my panties were clean, not to highlight my lines. And so
okay.
And
my mom
so
did the same thing.
So she, you know, it was my life. It wasn't their lives.
Yeah. And did you have friends who were outside that world, outside show business, that you were able to kind of have a more normal, friendship with?
Not really. I mean, my first real friend, I was 19 and he's still my best friend.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah. But most of the time I was just around grownups.
And guys, kids, boys must have been weird with you. I mean, I can imagine they must have.
Ugh, It was awful.
Yes. It was literally made a hilarious face.
It was, yeah, it was traumatizing.
I bet. And how did your parents protect you from that? Like, what was their move? How did they shield you from that?
Love, yeah. Just love, just love. Yeah. And like a constant reminder of, you know, the things that are important in life. I was other things beside an actor or a child actor. I was also a sister and a daughter and a poet and a an artist and skateboarder, whatever it was.
So that didn't become your identity.
Exactly.
People know you now. You are doing something that is kind of transcends acting, and you're doing something, you're really using your voice, and you've become a huge activist. And when did that begin? Because I remember seeing Donahue. I remember seeing you and Ryan, you kiss Ryan White, which was an amazing thing that a lot of people maybe listening to this weren't aware of or had forgotten about. But that to me was like, because we were similar age, I remember being really struck by that and the courage that took to do that and the impact that had. Was that when it began, would you say?
That's when it began, for sure, yeah. I mean, everything made sense to me after that moment, after realizing what it meant to be in the public eye and all of the good it could do in complete. I mean, Ryan was a hero. He completely reshaped the narrative of HIV/AIDS in a time when there was a lot of stigma attached, and our government sort of fed into our biggest fears and worries. Not much has changed in that respect, but but it was a defining moment in my life because I just felt like, talk about your reward center lighting up.
I felt like
this is why. I get it now.
Really fed you.
I get it. I get it now, God. From that moment on, I don't know fame without activism.
Interesting. Yeah.
Seems like I'm a lot more active now because I get to control my platform with social media. But back then, I mean, you know, we had to wait for someone to want to do an interview with us to share
like
who we were, you know?
How did you come to meet Ryan White?
Elton John, which just gives you a little glimpse into how obscure my childhood was.
Yeah. Well, what kid doesn't know Elton John?
Right. But Elton, you know, who was such an advocate and activist for the LGBTQ plus community then, just as he is now. And he recognized that Ryan White, his story was different because he contracted HIV from a blood transfusion.
Yeah.
And he was a kid, and he realized that Ryan put a human element that was lacking, that led people to feel a certain amount of empathy and compassion. And so he and Ryan became friends, and through that friendship, Elton learned of Ryan's love for me. And so he introduced me to Ryan.
Oh, wow. That's so
and
cool.
Ryan and I became very good friends. Wow. And so asking me to kiss him on the Donahue show came from a very deep love for each other.
Yeah, I bet. And a sense of responsibility that you've now really, you know, used to great effect, that you mentioned your platform and being able to use that to affect real change. And that was huge. I was huge for me. I mean, I was being fed the same stuff that everybody else was in terms of the stigma surrounding AIDS, and that went a long way. That was huge, what you did.
The thing that I think was very different, though, about that time was that we were encouraged to use our fame for good then. And when you look at people like Audrey Hepburn, when you look at people like Danny Kaye, Paul Newman, when you look at Roberto Clemente, mm-hmm. you know, like even athletes, Jackie Robinson, there was a, you know, the entire civil rights movement were celebrities standing behind with their fist in the air and handing over their platforms to people. So I think that people in our entertainment industry, I think we were scared into believing that half of the nation would not buy our products or mm-hmm. watch our TV shows mm-hmm. if we had an opinion about things. And I think that that may have been a very successful strategy by the Republican Party, because they had very few celebrity supporters, because, you know, after the civil rights movement, when the Democrats realized that it was unjust for them to try to keep, because originally it was the Democrats who, tried to suppress the black vote.
Dixiecrats.
Yeah. And so once that had shifted, I mean, I think we were really encouraged to use our voices. And it wasn't until big Hollywood machine came in and, you know, put the fear of God into movie stars where, you know, they were allowed to have a voice.
Right. Like you said, it does go back. It goes back to Charlie Chaplin. I mean, like, Charlie Chaplin was literally run out of America for standing up to the powers that be. Is there more of an impetus to do this kind of work now? Is there ever a part of you that wants to redirect your energy back into acting, to acting again? Or are you more fulfilled through this work?
It's real hard after you've had this experience. And mind you, I don't just mean political activism, but I'm also an ambassador for UNICEF. I've traveled the world. I've seen some really, really hard things to see. And I've always been incredibly boots on the ground. I lived in South Africa for 3 months in 2000. I've been to Angola, Africa, only 2 years after the peace treaty was signed for the longest civil war in the history of the world. India, 6 months after the tsunami. I've been all over the Middle East visiting troops. I've been in Kosovo. So I only say this because once you've had these experiences, the entertainment industry becomes a means to fund my activism and advocacy work.
I bet. Yeah.
Because I have a very hard, and to also maintain a certain level of fame, because they sort of feed each other.
Yes. I mean, but like you said, it's the stakes are so much higher, so clearly higher to have done all of those things. I can't imagine how then fickle and superficial it must seem to go back to,
what part am I playing now?
And
right. And hit this tape mark and say words that you didn't write. And they've somehow figured out a way to take a lot of the artistry out of acting. I don't know how they pulled that off.
One of my favorite aspects of the holiday season, I love the sounds, the sights, of course, watching the lights, the Christmas trees, but I also love the smells of the season, the chestnuts roasting and the smell of pine. And I also now love my own smell, not to odor brag. I owe it all to Native. Native's new seasonal scents are here, and I could not be more excited because I am a loyal Native user. I've been looking for a healthy, natural deodorant ever since I heard about how bad aluminum and parabens and sulfates are for you. But I was never able to find one that actually worked, that made me smell better and covered up body odor, frankly. And now I have. I am so thankful to them. Native, they're the best. They use natural ingredients like coconut oil and shea butter. They never use aluminum, parabens, or sulfates. But like I said, it still keeps you smelling fresh all day. I don't know how they do it, but I love the smell. And now I'm excited for these new seasonal scents. Candy cane, sugar cookie, which I'm afraid to try because I might try to eat my own armpits, and fresh mistletoe.
So keep the sense of the season with you with Native's limited time holiday scented deodorants. Go to nativedeo.com/long or use promo code long at checkout and get 20% off your first order. That's nativedeo.com/long or use promo code long at checkout for 20% off your first order. I used to have quite a bit of trouble sleeping, and I know Christian did too. He's not here, but I can attest to this. Our sleep has improved, and it's improved thanks to three very important letters, C, B, and a D. In this case, I'm talking about Plus CBD. It's a gummy. It's a sleep gummy that's formulated by a team of medical experts and doctors. They taste great. They're made of award-winning CBD combined with melatonin, magnolia bark, lemon balm. You can sleep better. It really works. I mean, I've tried a lot of things, a lot of over-the-counter things that leave me feeling kind of groggy and weird in the morning. I never feel that way. I wake up feeling refreshed, ready to go. 4 out of 5 people say that they suffer from poor sleep at least once a week. I used to be 1 of the 4 out of 5, and now I'm in the minority. I'm one of five people who sleep great, thanks in part to the Plus CBD gummies. Just go to pluscbdoil.com and enter promo code LONG for 40% off your order. 40%! So it's easier to try it. So visit pluscbdoil.com and enter promo code LONG for 40% off your order.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
You've had so much experience in network TV. A lot of that has felt a little bit more forced and less natural to me. Has your experience changed in terms of how you see acting, how you see the scripts that are coming? Have you fallen out of love with it to some degree?
I don't know that I was ever in love with it. I think that I was always, and I think that that enabled me to reach a certain level of success.
Yes.
But here's my problem.
Okay.
And my problem is this. I have fought really hard to be this woman that I am right now. And it's through, you know, a lot of hard work and therapy and self-exploration and reflection and really uncomfortable shit. It has become harder for me to walk on a set and not be me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And to dive into my emotional well to portray someone else.
Right, right.
To dive into, you know, like I just did a movie for Netflix that'll be released in, or dropped, whatever they say, in January. And my sister dropped. Yeah,
Dropping. You made a dropping.
Yeah. My sister dies on page 4. And so, you know, for 2.5 months, I'm walking into work every day and having to tap into my own emotional well that I've worked really hard to heal.
I see. Yeah. Huh.
And
so now it's like, you're just scratching a scab constantly.
Constantly. And that's what we do as actors, right? We go back to our own trauma to be able to, you know, project emotion. It has become harder and harder for me to do the more healed I am. And some actors, do they find it therapeutic?
Yeah.
For me, it gives me anxiety.
Huh. Oh, interesting. It's probably in a weird way making you better, you know? I mean, because when you do accept something like that, you have to really, like you do with your activism, you have to commit. I mean, if your sister dies on page 4, unless it's a 5-page script, which would be hilarious, you have to really maintain that level of commitment, which is...
Yes. But it's kind of like childbirth where... it's so excruciating, but then something happens when you're, you know, when your kid's like 18 months old, where you kind of forget about the trauma of actually going through it. And you're like, you know what? I could do that again.
I've always wondered that, Alyssa, because this similar thing, that's happened to people in my life. And I always wonder if that's just like an evolutionary thing, there must be some evolutionary mechanism that it's the combination of, now it's an age where it's really cute. They're not constantly shitting themselves. And you like you said, forget about the
struggle.
The struggle.
Yeah.
I wonder.
And that's kind of like working on a movie or a TV show for me.
Oh, okay. So I do know about childbirth.
Yeah. So I, well,
No, no, you said it. You said that I know exactly how childbirth feels. well, have you ever thought about then giving that up then and running for office? I wonder this about you often, like, because you are so good at what you do. And it sounds to me like you just enjoy it more on a very purely superficial level. So did you ever think about just, I'll run for office?
Yes, it feels like that would be a natural progression. My thought, though, is I'm not sure I'd get as much done. All of my friends who are in Congress, whether they're in the House of Representatives, whether they are in the Senate, whether they are municipal, whatever it is.
Yeah, all your friends.
Yeah, my buddies, Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz, sure.
Yeah, you know, all my buds. They
Joe Manchin.
They are all very frustrated. And a lot of them were activists and community organizers. Actually, the most effective legislators I know were activists and community organizers. But you have to be okay with the incremental wins. I don't know that you're ever working to solving issues if you're an elected official.
It's just pushing stuff around. It just seems like it's just moving stuff around.
And it's also, it's like making sure shit doesn't get rolled back.
Uh-huh, yeah. Oh
my. That the fights that were already won.
How do you keep then, my question now becomes, how do you keep from being too spread out? I see you everywhere. I see you with voting rights. I see you with Me Too. I see you are active in so many areas of activism. How do you do that without being overwhelmed, I guess, by all of the injustice?
I'm always overwhelmed. So,
okay. So you don't.
I'm not saying I'm not overwhelmed.
Okay.
I am overwhelmed, but I have a hard time saying no when asked.
Yeah.
And also I look at it as a challenge to be able to educate and empower myself to learn about all of these different issues and the history of them and be creative in my thinking on how to manage them in a different way or get people looking at things in a different light, much like what Ryan White was able to do.
What was he like, by the way? Like, what was he like as a person? What are your memories of him?
He was courageous.
But like hanging out, like when you guys would like be around each other.
He was funny. He was funny. He was self-deprecating. He was...
Was he scared? Was he afraid?
He never let on that he was afraid. Uh-huh. I'm sure he was because you know, the end, he was very sick. And he had to fight to go back to school and he spoke in front of Congress. I mean, this, the weight of the world, it was
to
on
spend
him.
Your last amount of time with that kind of scrutiny and pressure. Really amazing what he went through.
There are people like my friend Adi Barkin, who has ALS, who is, he is a civil rights attorney who has dedicated his last and final days in, you know, Medicare for All and getting everyone healthcare, and he's just, you know, there are really miraculous, incredible people. And if they can keep going, then I can keep going. I might be a little medicated, but.
Yeah. Well, whatever gets you through the night. Are your kids ever like, Mom, relax? Are they ever like, how do you filter this stuff? Because a lot of it is a lot of it is overwhelming and deeply sad. And how do you filter it so that they're not absorbing a lot of that?
You know what? I don't really have to filter it because they see it in such a beautiful, pure way. Like, for instance, when we were fighting for Dreamers DACA in 2017, I told him I was going on a bus tour and we were, you know, I told him all about Dreamers and how our president was trying to send them back to countries that weren't their homes. And this was the only home that they knew. And in some instances, they didn't even, you know the language of the countries that they were being sent back to. And my son, after this whole long day of being on the bus with Dreamers, I opened the door and he looked at me and he said, "Did you win, Mama? Did the Dreamers get to stay home?" And I was like,
"Wow,
that's it. That's it. Yeah. If we could just depoliticize every issue and bring it down to its most fundamental.
Right. Well, that's what I love about a group that I know you're familiar with, our friend Elsa, This Is About Humanity. Mm-hmm. That's what they do. I mean, that's at the heart of their work is about, it's about people. And that's what's been so beneficial to me when I get to actually see the people that are benefiting from what they're doing in the fundraising. Because some of these things, sometimes it can become like, you know this better than anyone. It can just become this abstract thing. It must be frustrating to you to do work for a political, to help promote a political candidate, to do surrogate work, and then see them maintain this really inhumane status quo. Do you have access to these politicians? Are you able to say to them, you know, do you have the direct line? Do you have the bat phone where you can say, hey, what the fuck?
I have connections with President Biden. I had a bat phone during the campaign. I do not have that bat phone anymore. But my activism is critical of both sides of the aisle.
Right.
And I don't think just because a Democrat is our president, they should be void of criticism when criticism is due. And by the way, it's the whole Democratic Party right now is disappointing many people. And you know, part of me feels like everything that we sent them to do, Joe Biden had a very progressive platform, the most progressive we had seen from a candidate. Maybe not a primary candidate, but from a presidential candidate.
Yes.
And he was very smart. He borrowed from all of the most progressive candidates in the primary and took ideas from everybody and listened to organizations and listened to grassroots organizations and listened to activists and listened to advocates. And, you know, we kept the House, we flipped the Senate-ish, and we sent the president in record numbers to D.C. to fulfill a very progressive agenda. And it has been incredibly frustrating for activists everywhere to not... Now, mind you, if we can get Build Back Better passed, it is going to change the lives of many American people. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I think that's the most important thing. But there's a lot that I'm disappointed in thus far.
Do you ever, you had mentioned the dangers of social media and how it can be overwhelming. Do you ever take breaks? Do you ever, and if so, how does that affect you? I mean, how are you affected by staying off social media for a length of time?
I'm fine with it, actually. It seems like I'm on social media all the time, but I am really good at like composing tweets or making TikToks weeks in advance and then just dropping something.
You have a time for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I guess you have to.
And, you know, I paint and I am a gardener and do all sorts. And I love to read. And so I do all sorts of things, too, that aren't, you know, about activism and advocacy work.
Well, my other questions are all about gardening. So perfect.
Bring it.
What is your prize? What's the thing that you brag most about? Your like your garden brag.
I have... I have 80 oak trees on my property. 80, yes. And we just lost one. We had an arbiter come out, and it was hold out in the middle and becoming dangerous. So they cut it out, but they left this beautiful oak tree stump that I have started gardening in.
Oh wow! Yeah, it must be so fertile because they're like rotten.
But it looks so beautiful, and it's
that's so
just,
cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. So that's my little project right now. But I make terrariums and do all sorts of things, like nerdy things.
I got so into it during the quarantine. That's all I kind of started doing on Instagram. In fact, was showing off my produce that I was growing. Japanese eggplants I got really into. I feel you. It's yeah. actually when I feel my most relaxed, I think. When
I'm Me gardening. Too. It's my happy place.
Your book, you have a gardening book, in fact, called Sorry Not Sorry.
It's all about gardening.
Yes. but it contains 32 essays describing your activism, thoughts on current issues. Why did you name it? Why Sorry Not Sorry? I think I know, but I'm curious.
Well, the subtitle was going to be Stories of Being Unapologetically Fucked Up.
Uh-huh. Why fucked up? Why would you say, if somebody said, okay, so I've never heard of you. Let's decide an alien comes down from the planet, has never seen Who's the Boss, only saw the pilot when it was You're the Boss. And they say, well, why? Why are you fucked up? Why would you say you're fucked up?
That's a lot to unpack, that question. Okay, there's a lot of trauma. There's a lot of feeling other.
Uh huh.
You know,
so
I mean,
you're fucked up in this, but in the context of the title, fucked up refers to everything, your dysfunction. Yeah.
Listen, this is who I am. These are my opinions. Sorry, not sorry.
Okay.
I'm apologizing for not being sorry.
Okay. Are there times where you do feel like, oh shit, I messed up? Have you ever felt like, oh, I may have gotten this wrong and I do now have to say I'm sorry?
Oh yeah.
Not I'm sorry, sure. But like.
For sure. Yeah. But I think the blessing is that I get to fuck up in a really public way and deal with it with as much grace as possible and promise to fuck up less the next time.
Yeah.
And hopefully that makes the idea of taking the fear away from people withholding their empathy.
Yes.
You know, if they can say, oh, look, she said the wrong thing, doesn't mean her heart's in the wrong place. And she's dealing with it with grace and she apologized. And so I feel really blessed that I get to do that publicly. I mean, you gotta remove the ego from the work, but I don't think the ego can be married to activism anyway.
Well, otherwise there's no room for discourse or for being wrong or for seeing things another way.
Also, you're attached to an outcome.
Right.
And with activism, the only thing that you can do is plant a seed.
Yeah.
I look at people like Alice Paul, who wrote the Equal Rights Amendment, which is my tombstone issue, and she never got to see all 38 states ratify, you know, the bill that she wrote, the amendment for the Constitution that she wrote in 1920. But it might pass in my lifetime. Huh. So yeah. If we're talking about gardening, which is what my book is all about, you have to be okay with planting the seed and allowing someone else to harvest the fruit.
What do you do when it becomes too much? Do you detach ever from it? Do you unplug? How do you clear your mind?
Take a gummy and have a margarita.
Okay. I thought you said I'll take a gun. A gummy.
No, gummy. That's much a gummy.
Yes.
A weed gummy and a margarita.
What, 5 milligrams? What's your...
10 milligrams.
What dose? Yeah.
10 milligrams. And I'll just paint or play in the dirt or whatever.
That's the best. God bless marijuana. Do you ever watch like trashy TV, or do you have a guilty TV pleasure?
I mean, I don't spend a lot of time in front of the television, which is so ironic.
Yes, it is. What do your kids think of your stuff? I mean, I'm sure Charmed comes on, or Who's the Boss? I'm sure something you're on comes on at some hour of the day.
They have no desire to. My son is really.
Oh, really?
My son really likes looking at my TikToks because he thinks I'm really funny. But as far I tried to get them to watch Who's the Boss. They were so, they were like, okay, Mom, look at you. You look just like Bella. And that's my daughter. And then they, you know, ran off to play soccer or something. They don't care.
No kidding. We have the same chapstick flavor. I don't have it on me, which I wish I did. Cherry chapstick.
The best.
That's so funny. So they have no real interest in funny.
And weird. I would actually say that they're more interested in my activism than they are my acting.
Oh my gosh. Well, also Dave, your husband, I mean, like, you must be around a lot of actors that they recognize. Are there ever people that they get excited about? Like superhero people?
This is a sweet story. My son was really inspired by Amanda Gorman's, as we all were, poem at the inauguration. And he decided that he was going to write a poem. And so I sent it to her and she posted it on her social media.
She pawned it off as her own work?
No.
No, no, I'm kidding.
She, no. Oh my God, could you imagine?
Well, this is a scoop.
No.
No. No, no, we're cutting out all the parts where you say no.
No, she posted it and said, this is my 9-year-old friend Milo wrote this. And oh. So he thought he was a big shot from that. And,
oh, that's...
And I just thought that that was really special. You know,
a nice thing to be celebrated for, too.
We call, yes, exactly. We call Bradley Cooper in this house his Uncle Bradley. but they don't.
Hey, Bradley.
But they don't care.
They don't care. That's so funny.
Nope, they don't care.
I can only imagine Bradley around them because Bradley, he's so good at like making you feel special. And, you know, man, you look so good. And like, I can imagine. He's very charming with the kids.
He's very sweet with them, and yeah. He never forgets one of their, you know, their birthdays or.
Ah, oh, that's really sweet.
He sends me and my husband anniversary gifts every single year.
What? Really?
For our wedding.
Just, are you serious?
Yeah. Well, he spoke at our wedding 13 years ago or whatever, and you know he's been through all of his friends being. With people and divorced and yeah. And we are still going. So I think he's really overwhelmed by that.
I know it's a rare thing.
It is.
In our business. Yeah.
It is.
Wow. Yeah.
So yeah, Uncle Bradley, my son wrote a letter to Governor DeSantis about the wild cougar crossing that was happening in Florida.
The animal.
Yeah. That yeah. That my son was very upset with, and I recorded him reading it, and then I sent it to Mark Ruffalo, and I was like, so, you know, you can totally say no to this, but it sure would mean a lot, and if you could give him a little encouragement. And so Mark sent him a video, and Milo was like, oh, cool. I don't know.
That's...
Yeah. I was like, it's the Hulk. It's the Hulk.
It's the Hulk. Well, maybe he wasn't, he hadn't hulked out. You don't want to get one from Bruce Banner. It's not as fun.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled BABBEL.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
We have a lightning round, if
I'm
you'll
ready.
Indulge me.
Sure.
Okay. Here we go. What is your most commonly used emoji, would you say, your go-to emoji?
The winky kiss.
Winky and kissing with a little heart coming out?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I love that one. If you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play? You're wearing a Dodgers shirt, I need to point out to everyone.
Yes, I would be a professional baseball player. I would be a catcher.
A catcher?
Yeah.
Now, why a catcher?
Because they control the entire game from back there.
Yeah, that's true. You'd have to get hit a lot, potentially.
And also, they're involved in every single play, right?
Yes.
Every pitch. Every single
pitch.
That's
true.
So, I mean, I couldn't be an outfielder because I'd be, like, looking at the sod, you know?
Oh, see, you know what's funny? Well, this is how different we are. This actually is, like, a perfect example of, like, how I have such fear, whereas you are – that's a courageous answer because I don't know if I'd be able to deal with that pressure. In fact, I remember playing baseball and playing both positions and not dealing with the pressure. Because outfield is like every once in a while a ball comes to you, but if you mess up.
That's even more pressure.
Exactly.
The outfield.
Yes.
As a catcher, yes. Being involved in every single play keeps your mind in
focus.
The game and focus so that.
That's true.
You know, one passed ball isn't as monumental as, you know, if you make an
That's
error
true.
An error in the outfield and it, you know, stretches a single into a triple.
Oh, it's humiliating. Yeah, I feel like you guys go to games a lot.
We do. But we're a very sporty family.
You are. Who's your football team?
The New York Giants, because David's father is the head of the chain gang. At 85 years old, he runs out there with the yardstick.
What?
And measures the yardage for the New York Giants.
Mm-hmm.
True story.
He's still doing it at 85?
Still doing it.
Holy God.
He's still coaching soccer. He just had his 899th win as a high school soccer coach in New Jersey.
What?
He's in the Soccer Hall of Fame, my father-in-law, besides just being just an incredible human, but he's just...
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
If you could have one snack food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Cheez-Its.
Cheez-Its. Great.
Oh, my God. I love Cheez-Its so much.
Yeah, you didn't... That was so quick. You had that... It was so accessible.
Cheez-Its.
Yeah, they're delicious.
The good old-fashioned kind in the red box. Not the crisps.
Totally.
Not the like ranch flavor, the cheddar.
Oh
Cheez-Its.
Yeah, I know they're getting crazy.
Yeah,
would that mean that you also really like Goldfish? Other kind of like cheesy type snacks, like cheese based snacks.
No,
like
I don't think anything compares to a Cheez-It.
Oh wow, really? You're a real purist.
Yeah.
What was your what was the movie that you really? We talked about like your kids watching your stuff and being very ambivalent about it. But was there a movie that you were excited, like when you had kids, like you were really excited to show them? Like that was maybe something that was important to you when you were a kid?
I was really excited to show Bella the Wizard of Oz.
Oh,
and she was really into it. My son, I'm still waiting. I want to show Milo Searching for Bobby Fischer. And
oh, really?
The Goonies. Oh, I can't wait to show him.
Yeah, The Goonies, I get. Why Searching for Bobby? Is he into chess?
Because I think that it is a universal theme for children who are overachievers and parents who push their children maybe a little too hard.
Oh, interesting.
And I just think he'll really enjoy it.
Have you ever done it? Bella's too young for this, but have you ever done The Wizard of Oz where you sync it up to Dark Side of the Moon?
No. But I will.
When you're on a gummy.
I've done it.
Oh, you have?
I've done it for me. Yeah, I haven't done it.
It's wild, right?
It's wild. But here's the thing is, I think everything has a rhythm to it.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe so.
And I think sometimes that rhythm synchronizes to something else, to another rhythm. And when those moments, you know, like when you're in the car and you have the windshield wipers going and all of a sudden they totally sync up to like the don't walk sign flashing.
Yes, totally.
So
or a song that's playing even.
Or a song.
The beat of a song.
All at the same time. Everything is working together. So I think
it's in harmony.
Yeah, I think there's a rhythm to everything.
Uh-huh. Well, you must see that too because you live among nature. It sounds like you live, there's a lot of nature where you live. So you must...
But also, like, writing, too. You know, writing.
Yes.
There's a lot of rhythm in being able to compose a sentence impactfully.
I think you are correct. Sorry, I was trying to do one without rhythm. What is your, what's your go-to karaoke song? You're out singing, you're at Brass Monkey.
Nope. I don't karaoke.
You have to.
I can't.
If you were at a jukebox, what Beatles song would you like to hear right now?
Blackbird.
Oh, yes. God. Who was your first celebrity crush?
So C. Thomas Howell.
Oh.
But then there was someone else that I thought of the other day, and I can't remember who that person was now. But yeah, C. Thomas Howell, like in The Outsiders. Oh my God.
Yeah, right, yeah. Pony Boy.
Pony Boy.
You must, and Dave must have this experience where people say that to you all the time. Oh my God, you were my crush as a kid. Like people at parties must say that to you all the time. Has that gotten any? Is that, it must just be a part of your life. What does that do to you? How do you feel about that?
I always am worried that meeting me in person is somehow a disappointment from whatever, from whatever the fantasy that they have,
right,
that they have, like, you know, created of me in their own
right
head. That,
yeah, I
you
bet
know. I have this clothing line where it's all sports licensed, and we do signings a lot at stadiums, and I always get these sports fans that are like, oh my God, when I, you know, you were my first crush and whatever, and I'm always like, oh my God, and that's when I was like in my prime at 18, and now I'm almost 50, and this fucking guy is looking at me this close.
Oh, that's weird.
And I must be like, and I'll say, I hope I'm not disappointing you.
Oh, man. That's so strange. Yeah, I know. I also started at a certain point, like gauging my own age when adults would come up to me. And I didn't start that young. And they'd be like, I watched you growing up. And I'm like, growing up? You have a full beard. What?
Wait, but I didn't realize that I was aging until like everybody else my age looked old.
Well, you mentioned your Peter Pan complex.
Yeah, I mean, there's also some Botox involved in that, but
well, that makes it easier to not recognize aging. Yeah, but I was going to say you don't look like you've aged.
But I keep looking at it, but it's not even like how I feel like I look. It's just
right
a recognition of being middle-aged right by seeing how other people are middle-aged.
If you had to get a tattoo, you have tattoos, but if you do have tattoos, if you got another one, what would you get?
Probably my kids' names.
Uh-huh. Milo and Bella. Great names, by the way.
Thank you.
What is your favorite fruit?
Apple. A Fuji apple.
An apple. Who is your favorite Muppet growing up?
Animal.
Of course.
Of course. He made me laugh. He still makes me laugh.
Did you ever get to do a thing on Sesame Street?
I never got to do anything on Sesame Street. I would love to do that.
Yeah. What is your go-to pizza topping?
Just cheese. I'm a real originalist.
Okay. Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
You have dogs?
I have 5 dogs.
Oh, wow. Okay. All of them.
5 dogs, 9 horses, 8 chickens, 2 bunnies.
You have 2 bunnies?
I do.
That's good. That's correct. Well, that's a menagerie.
I rescued 2 bunnies. Yeah.
I don't know how you do all of it, but I'm glad you do.
Me too. I mean, these are the things that make me feel like a, you know, a human.
Well, good. Well, you are a very impressive human. I'm so glad I got to do this with you. It's really cool to get to talk to you.
Thank you. I really appreciate your support. Thank you so much.
So that happened.
That just happened.
A very recognizable voice.
That didn't sound anything like her.
I took my foot off the gas and didn't commit
to
that.
So
that just happened. It's hard for me to do.
You're doing like, are you doing a little seductive sounding?
I don't know.
A little seductive.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking.
Could that be?
What?
May I posit this theory?
Yeah. So
that in your brain, Alyssa Milano is associated with
charm,
your youth.
Yep.
And maybe having a crush on her.
Well.
So you. There's a part of you that still thinks of her as seductive. So when you do an impression of her, mm-hmm, maybe it comes across a little seductive.
That's true. But
I'm
afraid of you thought policing my intentions.
It's just a theory.
Yeah. I don't want to say whether it's true or not, but I think it might be true.
Well, you did have a crush on her.
Yeah.
I said that? Did I say that to
him? No, but I'm assuming.
Yeah.
You're that age. You had crushes on a lot of pretty girls.
I think everyone did. Alyssa Milano was, you know, that we talk about that in the show.
Yeah. A lot of guests of this show.
I didn't want to say it to her because
she's heard it a zillion times.
She's heard it. And like,
there's so many guests of that. Didn't Joe Gatto say that she was?
Yes.
There's a lot of people. A lot of people. Yes. She's the first crush.
I know. And I also didn't know how to say that. It's a little, I felt, I didn't want to sound, you know, just offensive or
reductive.
Reductive. Yeah. In any way. Sexist. I was pretty cautious talking to her about those things.
Yeah, that I get that.
Yeah.
So Alyssa Milano grew up on that show 11 to 9. I didn't realize it spanned those ages.
I know.
For her, 11 to 19.
That's
crazy. And they wrote it into the show how like her developing like Sam's first bra. That was an episode.
I kind of remember that.
You do?
Yes, I do. I mean,
I remember that.
I did watch that show a lot. I mean, it was a long time ago. My memory's poor, but I do. Whenever they revolved around Sam, I
paid more attention.
Probably.
It's interesting though that what that must have done psychologically to be so exposed.
I never thought about that.
Of course. Well, how could you have?
And especially after talking to Fred Savage, who had like the more idyllic version of that.
Noticed you kind of poking around trying to
draw a parallel.
Yeah, like that you asked if she had friends outside of show business that like kind of kept her grounded and normal, like he did.
Yeah.
And she didn't.
Yeah.
You know, she was friends. She was so ingratiated in that world that she only hung out with adults.
Yes, which I wonder.
And it makes sense that she now has a certain amount of jealousy, I guess. I mean, she used that word, so I'm using it towards her own children. They have this normal
childhood. I know. And that she would go to those lengths to protect them. I mean, she talked about, you know, keep having a little like, chickens and stuff. Didn't she talk about that? Like her, you know, how she's protecting them and like trying to enable them to have like a more...
Kind of, but then also having Uncle Bradley Cooper and Mark Ruffalo be such an active part of their lives.
That's true. That doesn't...
I mean, what a charmer, Bradley Cooper.
Oh, man, you know, we don't have to... we've talked
but
about...
But how, of course, I mean, does it surprise you at all that he remembers their anniversary
not
every year?
I knew you were going to say
and all the kids' birthdays.
Not
it doesn't
at
surprise
all.
Me a bit.
Bradley is... I mean, I would say we've met a lot of charming people in this business.
I don't think I will ever meet a more fully charming person.
Neil Patrick Harris is quite charming.
Of course. I've met a lot of other charming people.
I mean, Kobe Smulder. Like, there's some charming...
I've met other charming people.
Yeah.
But Bradley Cooper is like charm on steroids, you know?
We got to get Bradley on the show.
Guess what? If he said no, he would say it in the kindest, most wonderful way.
There was a rumor that last summer, was it, that Bradley was... here in our hometown.
We moved to Fairfield, Connecticut.
Yeah, that's
right. I don't
know
if someone started that rumor. It's not true.
It turned out, he said it was. So I reached out to him and I said, hey, rumors you moved into, and it was like the hot gossip.
Oh my God, everyone was talking about it.
It's not that small a town.
So it's like 60, 70,000 people. Yeah. And everyone, it was like the story for weeks.
The rumor mill was a buzz of Bradley Cooper's sightings, and they saw him here, and he was there with Leo, and there were all these. And so I texted him, and he was like, no, hey, buddy. He's like, but how are you? You know, like so charming and then people continued to see him. And so there was a brief period where I thought, is Bradley lying to me? Like, does Brad...
he doesn't want you to think he's in town.
This would be so insulting. And then I thought, like, well, why would he just... He just wouldn't have written back if he didn't want to see me.
Right. Well, maybe not. Maybe he's so charming, he wanted to make you feel good.
Yeah.
But he didn't want to have to see you.
That would check out.
But I don't think he would do that.
No, I don't either. But anyway, we got to get him on the show.
That'd be great.
Coup. Yeah.
That'd be a get.
Yes. And you know who else is a get? Alyssa Milano.
Yes.
And
of course.
Got her. And man, was it.
What do you mean we got her?
I mean, we got her to be on the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We invited her and she accepted.
Why'd you get so nervous just now?
I'm nervous about words sometimes with some people. She,
it's funny when
like you said, she has quite a platform and she is not afraid to speak her mind.
No, she's not. And, you know, it's interesting. I thought that when she was talking about Ryan White and that whole story, I thought, God, it's really wonderful what she did. And that's an example of something that should be apolitical, obviously. It's mm-hmm. like,
I know.
That story I know. Should inspire warmth and sympathy and love in all people, regardless of your political ideology. Mm-hmm. But then she started talking about Democrats versus Republicans and like they're the bad guys. And I mean, she didn't use those words exactly, but that's the idea. And I'm not putting it on her. I feel like generally that's become the problem, that we've taken such sides.
I know.
It's not really about the issues anymore. It's what side are you on?
Yes.
And if you're on this side, it means that you think everyone on that side is bad and evil. And if you're on that side, you think everyone on this side is bad and evil. So I think like the Ryan White thing really sparked that idea in me that people should, if everyone like recognized that we all want to get to the same place, but have different mechanisms at like how we get there. Yeah. I feel like we would get so much more done.
I know.
Politically in this country.
I know. But if you have a name, if you have a D or an R next to your name, it means everything. It trumps any idea you
and
might
have. And it doesn't mean that there aren't like tons of like extreme asshole bad people in both parties.
Of course.
But I think there are more people who want good things for this country, but just have very different approaches of how we get there.
That's well said. I know. I wish, I don't know what the prescription is. I do think that I really think the continuation of this vilification of one side or the other.
Vilification.
Continuation. I think it's just fomenting that sense of tribalism and that divisiveness. It's such a shame, but like, you know, and I it was difficult to talk to her a little bit about that because I know that she is very outspoken and does really take stands on things. And, you know, I think in order to make change happen, you have to do that. I mean, you have to be that outspoken but.
I just think it's different now, and it's not her fault. It's like we live in this social media world where everyone is trying to find the next like thing to jump on top of, good and bad. But like back in the day, she mentioned people like Audrey Hepburn and Roberto Clemente and Paul Newman. Certainly,
I know
these people were like such forces for good. And I'm not saying that she's not, but there was something more neutral about how they were seen. I think, you know, Paul Newman, because you look at what he did, he like helped kids.
Right.
And Republicans and Democrats and everything in between, everyone's going to agree that that's a good thing.
I know. He did it. It's such an apolitical movement, you know, whereas I think some of the issues that Alyssa takes up are quite politicized. And I think that's why she's very courageous to do that.
Very courageous.
Because she risks alienating all of these, you know, a huge portion of a fan base. And
that's ballsy. And she doesn't care.
She doesn't.
Because she's convicted in what she believes in.
Yeah. But like you said, the flip side is, you know, continuing to foment that divisiveness.
And, right.
I don't know. I don't know how. I certainly couldn't do that. So there's a part of me that it admires that. Because I have convictions, but I don't have the courage to, I don't have such strong convictions that I would risk.
I mean, we both get scared about what words we say on this podcast.
I know.
At one point, she was talking about her kid writing the governor of Florida a letter about wild cougar crossing. And you just said, the animal?
Oh, man.
And she goes, yeah.
Yeah.
it really made me laugh.
Well, because you know what, it's not the best environment for jokes like that.
No, so I...
Yeah.
But I admired bravery.
I'm not going to be courageous, but there was a part of me that like, I realized it was just, I needed to say it. I needed, it was like too much to contain that low-hanging fruit.
Keep the lid on that pot.
It was
low-hanging fruit.
Easy. Yeah.
Let's read a letter.
Okay. Here we go. From Katie Crouch, K-R-A-W-C-Z-Y-K. It's a Polish, I think.
Wait, say it again. Spell it again, rather.
K-A-T-I-E.
Second name.
K-R-A-W-C-Y... I'm sorry. K-R-A-W-C-Z-Y-K.
Krawczyk.
Krawczyk. Yeah, I think you're right. Krawczyk.
It's Polish, I think.
Yeah. You don't both have to assume that the name Krawczyk is Polish. Subject. Ciao, amici.
Whoa. Maybe she's Italian.
Wow. Okay. Ciao. But you know what? As I've discussed, spent a lot of time in some of those Eastern European countries, and many of them use ciao. Ciao is like a pretty, in Bulgaria they use it, Estonia. Anyway. Hello, Justin, Christian, and Life is Short crew. My name is Katie, and I'd first put it on record that contrary to what you might assume from my subject line, I'm not Italian.
Oh.
Hmm. Okay. And that's the end of the letter.
Shut up.
No, I'm kidding. Okay. However, after listening to the Stanley Tucci episode, I became motivated to learn how to speak Italian. I don't have any that's a cool language to hear. I would love to be able to say it because I think it fits the way I speak anyway. I think I speak with, you know, you know what I'm going to say? I don't know how to say this now.
I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah, that I speak in a kind of flowery way. Yeah. Well, which brings us back to the beginning that I have some of those qualities might be considered feminine.
I think flowery and effeminate are two pretty different things.
That's true because Stanley Tucci is by no means, he speaks in a Italian kind of way.
Yeah, but not like a stereotypical, like,
hey.
The Simpsons
no, I know, I know.
Italian like, chef character.
Or like Chico Marx.
Right.
Okay, back to Katie. However, after that she's going to learn Italian. That's cool. I don't have any big plans to go there anytime soon, but the fantasy of driving through the Italian countryside, eating amazing food, and admiring the culture is what's keeping me going. I totally agree with her. I want to do that so badly. And both from Stanley's show and also from, I love that movie, Steve Coogan movie with Rob.
Yes. What's it called? A trip.
The Italian trip. No. That's the Mark Wahlberg movie.
There's two or three of them.
Yeah, right? Yeah, where they go on a trip in Italy. Yeah, anyway.
I can't believe I can't think of
them. I know, they're so funny.
I think one is just called The Trip.
I think you're right. They're great. That's funny. I was going to say that, and Katie says that in her letter. she says in Justin's voice.
Well,
in fact,
Jerry's voice.
Yeah, you incorrectly attributed that to me.
That's best friend of the show, Jerry O'Connell.
BFF of LIS, Jerry O.C., I have a 2-hour round trip to and from work, so I've decided to split my time between learning Italian via an Italian for Beginners podcast on the drive to work, and then I listen to your podcast on the way home. That is such a good idea. Sorry I keep interrupting, but I'm really inspired by this letter so far because I want to do that. And Spanish is not sticking. I need to find a different
language.
That's
an understatement.
So far, it's been a great balance and makes the drives less painful. Wow, 2-hour round trip. I wonder where she works. I'm such a fan of the podcast and a huge accepted fan, but because of that movie, I have beef with you, Justin. What do you think her beef is going to be?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Here we go. Let's find out. I watched it with my older sister when it was first released, and afterwards I learned the hard way that shit is a bad word. Not to point fingers, but I think we all know who's to blame for the trouble I got in with my parents for being a potty mouth at the ripe age of 10. Wait a minute. She didn't know at 10 that shit was a bad word?
Guess not.
So, you know what's funny? I often say I was
10 is pretty young.
10 is young, but I'm trying to remember, I was a late bloomer when it came to that stuff, and I definitely knew about shit when I was in third. That's third grade.
Cool. You want a parade? I think not everyone does.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I was driving in LA traffic and I was like, oh man. And I pulled up next to this car and I was, the back window was down a little bit and there was this adorable dog. I was on Sunset and Highland. You know how it gets really crowded there? Mm-hmm. I was at that light by that In-N-Out and there was a really cute dog. I was just staring at the dog. I was like kind of like out of it. I've been in traffic and I was just like staring at this dog. And the driver's side window, the passenger side just went like rolled down. And these two people were like staring at me. And I looked at and I go, oh, sorry. Sorry. I was like checking out your dog. And there was a woman in the front seat. And I think the guy, at first I thought the guy thought I was like checking out, like staring at his, you know, partner.
Uh-huh.
And the guy goes, no, I go, sorry. I was just looking at your dog. And he goes, nah, man, I'm a shithead.
funny.
Yeah, and he was like a big Accepted fan. Anyway, it's back to Katie. Assumes you feel bad and apologize here. Oh, she assumed I would feel bad. I don't feel bad. because
you didn't write it.
I didn't write it. And if you're 10, it is like a PG-13 movie. You know, if you didn't know the word shit by the age of 10, I would assume that
you shouldn't be watching PG-13
movies. Yes, yeah. And the thing with that movie is, I think we've talked about this, it should have been R. And there was a cut that is R, where Jonah especially, like, had a lot of R-rated ad-libs. But in a PG-13 movie, I think you have a limitless number of shits that you can say, but only one, maybe two fucks. And
so no apology from you.
None. Okay, back to the letter. It's okay. All is forgiven. And I'll leave the past in the past.
She assumes you would have apologized.
She's being cheeky.
I know.
Since you so kindly apologized, here is a would you rather for you and Christian. Wow, now I kind of feel bad I didn't apologize. Okay. Would you rather have the ability to teleport once a day, but never know the location until you arrive, or be able to teleport wherever you wanted, but every time you arrive to a new place, you turn into a random animal? In each scenario, you have to spend at least 24 hours in the location you teleport to. Okay. So you go as yourself.
So we're assuming mammal? Like animal, like a mosquito is not an animal.
Well, it is.
It is?
It's just not.
That's true. It's part of the animal kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think of bugs as being animals.
Well.
They are, I guess.
They are. Yeah. Insects.
Well.
There's insect, mammal, reptile, amphibian,
fish. My answer is this.
Yeah.
My answer is I would rather go as an animal and control where I'm going as long as I wasn't like a mosquito and someone could crush me in the 24 hours. If I was safe.
Any non-insect?
If I was safe and I could keep a human brain.
Yeah.
And I can see that place through my current mental situation, I think I'd rather be an animal.
I would too.
Unless, here's the problem. If I popped up as like a jaguar or something.
Oh, man.
And then.
You'd be.
And then they try to. And then you couldn't ensure your safety.
Because you wouldn't have that animal brain. You'd be like. Everything would be a threat because you'd have your brain, but you'd be out in the wild in a jaguar environment.
And people would all be looking at you and trying to take you down because you'd be a threat.
Of course.
So that's the caveat. I would rather be an animal as long as—
You could choose your animal?
No, not just choose, but as long as I was an animal that didn't draw attention to itself.
What animal would best—
And I remain safe.
What animal would best exhibit those qualities?
A gnat.
A gnat?
Yeah.
Well, that's like a mosquito. You say you don't want to be a mosquito.
I would be a mosquito. I just don't want to be crushed.
Oh, I see.
If I could ensure my safety, I would rather be something small and low profile.
I would prefer to be something. If I were to be
a bird. Bird would be
cool. Bird. I was going to say, because like then you could cover more area. A mosquito just like, they like hover in the same.
Cover more area. Every day you get to teleport somewhere else in the world of your choosing. How much area do you need to cover on top of that?
Well, let's say you teleport to somewhere in like Egypt. Egypt's a huge country. You'd want to make it to the pyramids. You wouldn't want to spend, I mean, like if you're somewhere in like the desert, you know, and.
But you could go to Egypt every day for 2 months if you want, and then you could end up seeing the whole
My point is you have to spend, think about what you said, you have to spend 24 hours in the location you teleport to. Let's say you teleport to somewhere in the Gobi Desert.
Why would you do that, though? Why would you pick the Gobi Desert?
You can pick your place. Yeah. That's true. Okay, I forgot about that. Also, if you're a human, if you're teleporting as yourself into a random location, what if you go, like, into the middle of, like, some war zone?
Right.
You know, you're in the...
Why would you pick the war zone? It's a good question.
Well, no, because you don't...
You don't pick it, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right.
With the first one, it's random.
You're right. Random.
Yeah, I would pick the second one if I could.
I'd want to have control of where I'm going. Even though there is something fun about popping up somewhere... It's also kind of scary because what if, not just scary, but like potentially kind of boring. I think there's more things in this world that I don't want to see than I do want to see. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
A lot. I mean.
You think?
I think so.
Like, I don't know.
I would say most places in this world I wouldn't want to spend 24 hours in.
Oh, really?
Oh, there's countless places that I would.
Oh, that's true. I mean, you know? Most places are quite desolate.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but like, still beautiful.
Siberia. Yeah, but you don't need 24 hours in Siberia, right? You need like an hour to poke around and be like, whoa, this is desolate. Cool.
You would just spend an hour in Siberia?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I think you'd find that
That's a good name for a memoir for me, An Hour in Siberia.
I think, I don't want to assume, but I think I would guess that if you were in Siberia, you just popped up there, teleported there, that you'd want to spend, it would be like really spectacular, the silence, the like quality of the air, the majesty of the like expanse. Like,
I'd have to figure out a place to sleep.
Well, yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying.
I'm just saying the logistics of it make more sense if you're an animal.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I just realized I think I would choose to be like a pigeon or something because
it's so funny imagining you as a pigeon.
Well, because then I'd want to be close to people. I'd want to be able to get close, and pigeons have access to like the human society in a way that most animals don't.
You kind of have pigeon energy as a person.
Yeah, I like,
you're always poking around, bopping, getting close to things.
Yeah, I like to bop around.
It's a good question though.
It's a great question.
I'm probably going to keep thinking about that.
Great, Katie Krawczyk. Okay, back to Katie. And now I want to apologize for her. I don't know what I could have done to control her having seen that movie. Okay, back to Katie. Thanks again for being the best form of entertainment on my work commutes and throughout my childhood. That is so nice. Sincerely, Katie. Thank you, Katie. Grazie.
Krawczyk.
Grazie for tutti.
Thanks, see what Katie. I did? Yeah, that was really good. Thanks, Katie, and we really appreciate. That's a really good letter.
Oh, yeah, it really is. Really what good, a great would you rather.
That's a good question. And if you guys would like to write in yourselves,
uh-huh,
we very much enjoy getting these letters.
I think that's evident.
I know. I just wanted to make it very clear, abundantly clear, how much we enjoy reading these letters. And even though we only read one an episode, but we love reading them.
We do.
If you'd like to write in and write your own letter, our email address is
lifeisshort@wondery.com.
And thanks to our guest, Alyssa Milano, our very special guest, who has been a very, very active, present part of our lives since we were little kids. That was pretty surreal.
It was cool
to hear her voice talk to you.
Grew up watching her, and it was nice to get to know her. So I hope you enjoyed that as well.
Now we need to get Tony Danza on the show.
Yes, and if you were going to write it, oh man, that'd be great to get him on.
Yeah,
and Danny Pintaro,
yeah,
the whole cast. And if you are going to write in, as Christian mentioned, maybe talk about your favorite Pepperidge Farm cookie. What Pepperidge Farm cookie do you like?
Oh, an assignment.
Yes. I don't know. Or a suggestion. And if you are a representative from Pepperidge Farm and you want to advertise on our show, feel free, because we're fans. Okay. And thank you for listening to everyone. And hey, happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
There's a time for love and a time for leaving. Now's the time we say goodbye. You've been listening to Life is Short.
Nope.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long, and it's co-hosted by you,
Christian Long.
It's also produced by you and produced by Megan,
the
Monaco, and Katie,
the
Allen. The senior producer is Michelle.
You're like, I see your brain working so hard to do this.
It's hard.
Senior producer is Michelle.
Mish.
Lance.
Audio engineer is
Sergio Enriquez.
Executive producer is Marshall Louie for a company called
Wondery.
Wondery. Bye, everyone.
Okay, is it funny when like coaches, like baseball managers, come to talk to the pitcher?
Yeah.
And there's always this air of like, all right, well, you gotta go to bed. You know, like,
and they like give the thing back. Like
no, you did okay.
He like gives his toy back.
Yeah. He's like, I'm making it.
And he like walk away.
Yeah. It's so shameful. Like a new like guy comes in and is like, okay, I can do better.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries, and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.